Hour.
And now for something completely different.
What's up? This is Hoppy Hour. I am your host, Ryan Hoppy, and this next guest, I've been listening to this man since I was in high school. Even though I've never lived in Minneapolis, I've always felt a connection to it, being a kid from Chicago. So I'm very proud to announce that Tom Bernard is on Hoppy Hour. What's up, man?
You know, like, we get to call your show Hoppy Hour. If I did the same thing, I'd have to call mine, like, Barnyard. That's really great.
I know. I always wanted to do it. So my mom is from the South, or kind of. She's from Cleveland, but her mom is from North Carolina. So I would call my grandma Nana, and she used to say to me growing up, it's Hoppy Hour, it's Hoppy Hour. So then, like, my whole life, I was like, I got to use that in some fashion. So then I ended up using it.
No, that's a great call. No question about it. I just... So where are you? So you've lived in Chicago most of your life, or all of your life?
So I lived in Chicago from 93 to 2014, and then I moved to Tampa Bay in 2015, and I've been here ever since, and I've worked for a few radio companies, and everything's been great, and I've been listening to you the whole time, and what I've always appreciated about you is you've never really, like, sold out. You've always kind of been the same Tom Bernard. And what I've liked the most is that I feel like you relate to the everyday common man. Like, the things you say, like, you've always had the platform to speak your mind, and you say what people are afraid to say.
Well, what's interesting about that is, I mean, especially these days, Brian, with these, both the far left and the far right just cannot wait to destroy people. They just love doing it. I grew up a Democrat. My mother was an ardent Democrat. And then later on in life, I tried, you know, because my third cousin, he was a Minneapolis cop, and he was a Republican. So I tried that for a while. I like Democrats. I like Republicans. But these people on the far right and the far left, I can't even deal with them. I've been fighting the situation for, I guess, 54 years now, since I was 18 years old.
And I noticed that, like, people will think that you lean on one side because you'll call out, like, Trump, or you'll call out Biden, and that. And it's very weird. It's like, I wish people could just be more in the middle. It's very divisive. Because, like, I'm not a guy, I can't stand watching, like, cable news, because I don't know I don't know what I'm being told.
Yeah, my wife, and I adore my wife, by the way, I'm a big time family guy, so I get very touchy about that kind of stuff. But I just sit back and I say, Catherine, I get up every morning, I watch 2 minutes of Fox, then I watch 2 minutes of CNN, and then I cannot watch either side of it anymore. They do not tell the truth anymore.
I thought things kind of went downhill for cable news during COVID when you had, like, Chris Cuomo going, like, I'm seeing things during COVID and being dramatic. And it's like, I don't think he was really hallucinating.
I don't think he was either. I mean, I don't know how deep you want to get into this, but I literally waiting to hop on, and what an honor it is to be. You're a very nice man. For, you know, what's interesting about that, Ryan, is that, you know, I grew up a very poor kid in North Minneapolis, and I wanted to be, you know, this guy that, on the radio, to have a voice and all the rest of it. But I just, to this day, even now, when somebody like you reaches out to me, it's a hell of an honor. I tested out of high school at 16. I went to college for one day and hated it. So to get invited across the country to be on other people's shows, particularly in, you know, Tampa, Chicago, the whole shoot, man, it's just a hell of an honor. So thank you.
I've always felt very relatable to the radio DJs. Like, I'm interviewing you. I interviewed Don Geronimo from the old Don and Mike show. And I've always liked that old school radio DJs, where they didn't do the best in high school and then they did community college radio. I've always felt like a connection to hosts like that. And the one thing I would say is, I've been curious. So growing up in Minneapolis, did you want to be the voice of the town? Did you want to leave Minneapolis? What was your approach to getting into radio?
That was interesting because I at 18 years old, I got my first job on like 1370 AM. It was like probably about a 5-watt daytimer. I don't think you can get it most places, but yeah. It was just to hop on the air was really great. I was there for about 6 months. I got a new PD who, I know this is hard to believe, Ryan, but some people don't like me. They just think I have too hard an edge.
Oh, Reddit. Reddit.com is proof, Tom. I have the same problem with Reddit. I have people write about me on there. Don't Google don't Google your name on Reddit. Never do that.
Oh, I bet not. I bet you it's a real thrill. But so I just, you know, I was on the radio for a while, and then I got fired from there, and then I got a job in Grand Forks, North Dakota, KNOX Radio, lasted about a year there. Came back down, and I was 18, I was almost 19 years old now at this point. And I called Jim Chanel, who was a program director at 1500 KSTP back in the day in Minneapolis, Hubbard Station. And I called him 82 times. And he finally said, okay, Tom, come on in. You can do the Jesus tapes on Sunday.
Nice.
And I'm 18, 19 years old. So I'm like, yeah, fine. No problem. I did the tapes for about 2 weeks. And they said, you know what? Our overnight guy's leaving. So I got the overnight job. And then it was 10 to 2, and then it was 6 to 10. And I mean, I was very lucky to work around really talented people like Chuck Knapp, you know, Knapp and Bush, Knapp and Donuts. I mean, everybody at 1500 KSTP was a real talent. I learned so much from really talented people. I was very, very lucky.
What was like a moment when you realized that things were really happening? Like, was there a moment, maybe it was when you joined KQRS or something like that, but when was there a moment where you said to yourself, man, this is really happening?
You know, what's really funny about that, because I left radio to do voiceover, and my big voiceover career was in Chicago, Illinois,
right, where
you're from. I was with what the hell was the name? A+. I was at the A+ agency, and I did every airline. I mean, I was one of the top 10 voiceover guys in America. And it just was because I guess I have such an unusual voice. It kind of sticks out. But so I came at back in those days, though, you had to fly back and forth. If you didn't live in Chicago, you had to fly back and forth. And sometimes I would fly to Chicago, work all day, fly back at home, do all that whole kind of deal. And then I went from there, and then I got a call from Don Buchwald, who was Howard Stern's manager. And Don Buchwald called me and said, hey, why don't you come and work in New York with us? And that'd be great. Da, da, da. So I did that somewhere. Now I'm flying from Chicago to New York, and New York to Chicago, back in. And we're living on 20th Street and 2nd Avenue in New York. And my wife calls me one day and said, Tom, we might have a problem. And I said, why is that? She said, because we're going to have a baby, and I don't want to raise a baby in Manhattan. And I said, I could understand why you wouldn't want to do that. Yes, I get that. The weirdest thing happened, Ryan. I literally was on the phone with Pat. Do I get if I walk away from Chicago and certainly walk away from my place in New York? What am I going to do? I suppose I can do local voiceover in Minneapolis. This is back in the day. This shows you how long ago this was. It was like 39 years ago now. I put the phone back on the cradle. You're probably too young to remember phones on cradles.
I think I might have had it in the 90s potentially.
Yeah, there you go. Because this would have been 1986. So, yeah, that's about right. So I put the phone back down. At the second I put it down, the phone rang, and I picked it up. He goes, hey, Tom, it's Dave Hamilton. I said, hey, Dave, how you doing? He goes, you have any interest in getting back into radio? And I said, God, I haven't done radio in several years. He goes, well, I would like you to do the morning show at KQRS. And I said, okay. I didn't even ask him about this, that, or the other thing. But I realized if I was going back to Minneapolis, I was going to need a job. I could do voiceover and the morning show. But I flew back into town, got together with Hamilton. Mark Steinmetz was a general manager, a very nice guy. And so we got together. I signed a 1-year deal, and it just... Ryan, it was so bizarre. It just blew up immediately. I think for what you're talking about, I have that side to me that people go, Jesus, what is that all about?
Yeah.
You know, because I'm not afraid of anyone or anything. It was, you know, I grew up very poor in North Minneapolis, grew up in a very tough neighborhood. A lot of people, well, two of my great uncles and one of my uncles were murdered. You know, it was that kind of life, very poor, a lot of violence and all the rest of it. So I'm not, to this day, I'm not afraid of anything or anyone. I just, and it's not that I'm some tough guy. It's just, I have no fear of anything because I've been through it all already, you know? So part of what you're talking about, when I go on the air and say the stuff I say, I am not afraid of anyone's reaction to it. I just don't care. I'm going to tell you the truth. And if you don't want to hear the truth, you should probably listen to somebody else.
Now, was there ever a moment that maybe you ranted about something on air and then you were like walking down the block and people would come up to you and almost like it was almost like tweeting before tweeting, where they would be like, Tom, I thought that was a good rant this morning, or Tom, I did not like that.
Oh, yes. All the time. It did happen all the time. One of my biggest advertisers now, Michael Bryant, as a matter of fact, he's been with me for decades now. And I was walking down the street in downtown Minneapolis, and he comes up, he goes, are you Tom Bernard? And I said, yeah. And he goes, I got to talk to you. That show of yours, I got, oh my God. He was just going on and on and on and on. And I just stood there and looked at him. He goes, aren't you going to have any reaction to this? I said, I am having my reaction to it. I don't give a rat's ass. There, what do you think of that action? And he and I have become friends. We've been friends now for 30 years. I don't know where it came from. I suppose, like I said, that Ryan, we could talk about my childhood, but it gets really not very good. My father was institutionalized. He took him away in a straitjacket when I was 7 years old. I've been through so much stuff that nothing scares me, doesn't bother me. I've been through it all. There's nothing you can do to me to make me feel all that bad, you know?
What did you do as a kid when you were having all these traumatic things happening to you? What did you tell yourself to keep going? Because like for me growing up, I just said, because like I was made fun of a lot and I wasn't very close to my dad, and my mom's super awesome, but it was just me in the house. And that's what got me in the radio, was I felt like it was people that would make me laugh and whatnot. So for me, I was able to tell myself, this is going to end sometime. I'm going to graduate high school and whatnot or whatever. For you, when you were going through all your traumatic experiences, what was young Tom Bernard saying to himself?
I was saying literally, and I'm glad you asked me that question, because it sounds like you've been through some of it. I just said, I don't care what happens, because what I've been through already, my mother, I love my mother, you know, she'd be 104 now, so she's not around anymore, but I love my mother and my brothers and sisters. And I just said, I don't know what it's going to take. I don't know what I'm going to do, but I am not going to live like this when I become a grown man. It's just not going to happen. And whatever I have to do, this is what I have to do. If I have to move away, if I have to work 20 hours a day, I promise myself that day I will not fail. It's not going to happen.
What was your first day at KQRS like? Do you remember it well?
I do remember well, because Mark Rosen, who was a big-time news anchor in town, was on the show, and a guy named Dan Cohen. Unfortunately, Dan's no longer with us, died very young. But I walked in there, and these guys were like, so? I said, yeah, how you doing? Nice of you. Now, Mark, I know who you are because you're on television. Dan, we've never met. I said, I'm going to say things on the air that you have never heard before, and you might not like some of it, and you might like some of it, but I am one of those kinds of people, I will say whatever I want to say. And you guys have to understand that. And if you get upset by it, you should probably go work somewhere else. Well, they didn't. I ended up being great friends with both of them as time went on, because I wasn't phony about that. I didn't like handpick things to rave and rant about. I'll give you an example, Ryan. Today, I'm watching the news. Again, I commit the crime of watching the national news. And George Stephanopoulos was interviewing, I can't remember. She's a United States senator from, I think, the Carolinas, but I'm not even sure of that.
Yeah.
On national television, he says to her, "Well, I don't understand, after what you've been through, how you could possibly vote for Donald Trump." And she said, "What do you mean?" He said, "Well, you were a rape victim. How can you? The guy's a rapist. How can you vote?" She said, "First of all, he's not a rapist. He was accused of sexual misconduct, not rape. And secondly, I can't believe you would bring that up on national television using me as your human shield."
Oh, my
she
goodness.
Lit him up like there was. Ryan, she lit him up like a Christmas tree. It was wonderful to watch. I cannot understand, Ryan, why someone go on national. Have you ever met George Stephanopoulos?
I do not want to.
Well, he's about 3 feet tall, first of all. So he's a little fellow, which those guys are always a major pain in the ass.
Yeah, they are.
But I mean, to literally bring up the fact that she was raped as a child on national television just to make his point, I had to light him up. I just had to do it. And why would you do that to another human being?
I didn't like when he did the interview with Alec Baldwin after that incident with the Rust movie, and he like gave Alec a softball interview, and then he's pretty much getting away with what happened, and then the armorer, that poor girl, I mean, she messed up, but it feels like what I don't like about the national media is that they protect their own, and it feels like guys like George are protecting Alec Baldwin at all costs.
Oh, I agree 100%. It just, these people, look, like I said, I don't like the extremists on either side. I like Democrats. I like Republicans. The center is great. But if you get too extreme with me, or I know you're using me to make yourself look better, I am not going to put up with that. And I will go after you so hard, you ain't going to believe it.
Did you ever get an FCC fine for some of your content ever?
Maybe.
What's there's that like? Because I've heard back in the day, getting an FCC fine was almost like a trophy. It was like a slap on the wrist. This seemed like that was prior to the Janet Jackson nipple.
Yeah, that's right. That's a very good point, actually. That is the deal. I am not one of those kind of guys, Mr. Hoppy, that I protect myself by using other people. I will not do that. I'm a grown man. I can protect myself. I've been through it all. Guys like George Stephanopoulos will go, or she's sitting across a desk and it's a woman, so he's nice and safe when he does things like that. Matter of fact, I just got off the phone with Mike Lindell. I was talking to him because there was an attorney that was going after him, and there's video of it. And he lit that attorney up like there was. And his attorney says, "Well, Mike, this is not going to help." He goes, "I don't care if it helps or not. He is not going to talk to me like that. And that's just how it's going to be." He lit that guy up. That's why Mike and I are friends. Do I agree with Mike on everything? Not necessarily. But I do know he's a very loyal man. And I just love the fact this lawyer tried to pin him down. And Mike Lindell buried him. It was wonderful to watch.
I think it's funny, from when I've looked things up online, people will be like, "Screw Tom Bernard. He hangs out with Mike Lindell, or he's not Trump or what." And it's like, I don't know what the big deal is with hanging out with different people in different parties. Like, you're allowed to be friends with people.
Yeah, I got friends that are Democrats, too. There's no question about that. I mean, I don't know. Actually, to tell you the truth, in the state Senate, the state House, the governor, all that stuff. Now I don't, because it's so far left now. It's just unbearable. So I don't have many friends in public office anymore. I used to, but these people will do anything for money. I mean, when I watch these national figures go on TV and chirp about this, that, it's just to make money and to cover their own. That's all they do, is cover themselves. They don't have any guts whatsoever. They would never say anything that would ever help anybody. They protect themselves and they try to make as much money as they possibly can.
And then what drives me nuts is, like, you've done very well for yourself in life, but you grew up poor, so you were able to relate to the audience that was guys working 9 to 5s. But what drives me nuts is like the people that either came into money or forgot about what it's like being poor, and they'll go on Fox News or whatnot, and they'll speak from their soapbox about things. I'm trying to think of an example, but they have no idea what their viewers are going through, and it's like you're speaking fake news. I'm trying to think of an example, but I know you know what I'm saying.
I do know exactly what you're saying because I watch it all the time. I don't know how we ever got to this point where hurting other people to make money is widely accepted across the board. Oh, really? You're going to make some money by harming them? Good for you. I'm like, what? Really? You're happy for a guy for harming other people for money? Okay.
I know. It's crazy. I don't even know where to get my news. I go to like the publications across like the pond, like the Mail and things like that. Cause I like seeing how the rest of the world reports America. Cause I feel like when you get news from America, it's going to be biased, but I love seeing like what people in New Zealand think about Biden or what people in Sydney, that to me fascinates me because it feels like you're getting a more, I don't want to say fair and balanced because that's Fox News' thing, but you're getting a fair and balanced report. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. No, I understand exactly what you're saying. It's just, you know, what's funny about that is I used to have politicians, friends on both sides of the aisle, Democrats and Republicans. I now have zero. I don't have any. Once they got, you know, my endorsement and got elected and got the money, I never heard from them again.
So I was looking up a lot of the things you've done online on YouTube, and man, where did the beef between you and Jesse Ventura begin?
That's funny you bring that up because several of my listeners now want me to get a hold of Jesse and have him on the show. Jesse and I were really good friends, and actually Jesse's wife and my wife were good friends. The family, his daughter, Jade used to come and babysit my children when they were little. I mean, we're very, very close. But as soon as he started going, you know, after the political thing, I said, Jesse, what do you want to do that for? You've made a ton of money. You're very famous. Everybody in the world knows who you are. You got your own TV show. Why on earth would you want to get into politics? And he said, I think I can win. I said, you got no chance of winning. Well, I was wrong. I'm wrong a lot. It happens. He gets elected. And then Dave Hamilton, my program director at KQRS, Jesse reached out to me and said, Tom, I want you to host my celebration of getting elected as governor of the state of Minnesota. And Dave Hamilton said, there is no way you can do that. Now, today, I would say, Dave, it's none of your goddamn business. Leave me alone. But back in those days, you know, I still had some respect for authority because I thought if you were decent to people, they'd be decent to you.
Yeah.
But Dave said, there's no way you can do that. It'll make the whole station, you're going to hurt your coworkers. You're going to hurt the station. I said, okay, if you think it's really going to hurt the station, my coworkers, then I won't do it. Jesse has hated me ever since because I called him and said, Jesse, I cannot do it. He goes, well, you're my friend. I said, I understand, but the people where I work are very afraid that it's going to destroy the station and blah, 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 blah. And he hasn't spoken to me since.
Yeah. And then he seems like he's always getting into arguments with people. Like there's the legendary clip of him like 14 years ago when him and Opie and Anthony got into it. And he just has this like,
that's right.
He has. And I was listening to that live. I was in high school and I had to like find it later on because like my class period ended. And I was like, damn it. Because I would listen to the radio while in class, different shows across America and whatever. And it's just like with that incident, he just seems like he doesn't like debating. I've never met the guy, but it feels like he doesn't like when people question him on things.
Oh, God, no. Oh, you got that nailed. You do not want to question Jesse Ventura. It's just not. As a matter of fact, you know what I might? It's funny you bring him up because I was thinking literally just the last few days, I should probably reach out to Jesse and see if he's calmed down yet. My God, it's like, relax. we're fine. But I don't know. Maybe I probably will reach out to him one of these days and see. But like I said, I will tell you one thing. If you told me, Tom, I really wish you wouldn't do that because it would hurt my family and whatever, I go, okay, I understand. I won't. I'm not going to go hurt people just to hurt people. That's not what I'm all about. And it, once in a while, I get pretty carried away in some of my beliefs and all the rest of it. I understand that as well. But all Jesse had to do was go, okay, I understand that, Tom, but look, we're still friends. We'll keep moving on. But because it didn't go Jesse's way, he has never forgiven me for that.
Were there ever any moments of when you're ranting on air and you say something that's sort of outspoken and you sort of think in the back of your head, oh man, that's going to come back to bite me? Or maybe you're really speaking your mind and you're going, oh, I'm going to hear about this later.
Oh, I definitely think I'm going to hear about this later, but I've never cared what hurt me or not. Cause you know, I'm very, very lucky in the fact that I worked at Capitol Records for 10 years, flying all over the country with the band. You know, Duran Duran was their first appearance was in Minneapolis at a bar in Minneapolis. So I would take them around and do all that. I did voiceover for 25 years, was one of the top 10 guys doing that. Then later on, I had the highest rated morning show in America, which I didn't even, by the way, Ryan, I didn't even know that my morning show was the highest rated morning show in America because they never told me that until I left.
Yeah, it's crazy. You definitely represented how local radio can be done right, because there's all these national shows and whatnot, and people claim local radio is dead, but then you look and you had like literally the biggest local morning show in America. It's crazy.
But I will tell you one thing, there's a huge Chicago element to that, because I was lucky. Larry Lujack, who was my idol, man. I thought Lujack was the best of all time.
Yeah, I've listened to old tapes of him online on YouTube, and he just has this cool presence. And
yes.
WLS has been sharing on their page profiles and pictures of DJs and talk shows from the past. And whenever they show a picture of Larry Lujack, he just looks like the coolest dude in the room. Like they'll like show pictures of him smoking cigarettes. And I've never really gotten into cigarettes. I smoke other things, hint, hint, nudge, nudge. But like whenever I've seen him, like I see a picture of him smoking a cigarette, he makes it look so cool.
Yes, I understand that. There's no question about it. I mean, that was another thing. I got to be honest with you. I had the chance to meet. We didn't become friends or anything, but we were acquaintances. I adored Larry Lujack. I got to hang out with Don Imus for a while when I lived in New York, and he was another one that changed radio forever.
Love Imus.
Oh, God, Imus was unbelievable. He would say and do whatever the hell he wanted. If you didn't like it, then go listen to somebody else.
I listen to old Imus online. There's a guy that uploads every show, and I began listening to him, I think, around 2015. I listened to his last 3 years, and sometimes he was a little too mean to his crew, but, man, he is so funny. Like, I feel bad that the nappy-headed comic is what people always will think of him as, because like he was very good, because his ratings weren't as good as Howard. That if you look up Don Imus online, everybody discredits him. They'll say, oh, he's the nappy-headed guy, or oh, he couldn't beat Howard in the ratings or whatever. But if you listen to Imus, he was brilliant at satire, and he kind of reminded me of you, where he didn't lean on one side. He kind of was in the middle.
Yeah, right. Yeah, no question about that. I mean, and the other thing, you talk about Howard and all the rest of it. There is one guy I don't want near me. He will do whatever it takes to make money. He's one of those guys.
And
I never thought he was any good, to tell you the truth.
Well, it's funny. I remember at the morning show boot camp, I'll never forget it. You were speaking at the conference, and it was you, Steve Dahl, a few other people. I forget who was at the panel. And Steve was talking, and you interrupted him, and you go, Howard Stern can thank you for everything. I'll never forget
that.
That's true. And everybody laughed. Yeah. It was awesome.
No, that's another guy. Steve Dahl was phenomenal. No question.
to me, you are the Steve Dahl of Minneapolis, because even though Steve wasn't from Chicago, he was, because Chicago radio, like, if you're an outsider, you have to earn the trust of Chicago. Like, one of my friends, is Fred, who's on 103.5 Kiss FM, and it took him a minute to grow, because, like, there's this weird thing where, and I think Minneapolis is pretty similar, where, like, you have to gain the trust of the people there. They're not just going to let you come into town and speak the mind.
Yeah, there's no. The other part of that is, and I don't know many people, you know, because I used to travel all around the country with Capitol Records and do that whole deal. And I've worked in Chicago and New York and Los Angeles and all these places. Chicago has always been one of my favorite places, because look at the media. The television anchors in Chicago are the best in the country. Minneapolis, I think, is up in the top five, no question. But radio, television, newspapers, they were all the best in the country at Chicago when I was living down there. There's no question in my mind about that.
So I interviewed Mark Giangreco last week, who was on ABC7 for years, and he said that working in Chicago, they were the famous people. So, like, Los Angeles has comedians and Hollywood and that, but for Chicago, that's what made people famous, was radio, newspaper, sports, TV. And that's what I thought was endearing about Chicago, is leaving Chicago, I don't know, it's hard to explain. Like, it's just not the same city, and it makes me sad. Like, I went there for my birthday in August, and I didn't feel safe. Like, I was there at midnight, and I was outside of a bar, and I was in a good neighborhood. But, man, I really hope that city can figure it out, because the homeless up there, there's a difference between homeless in Florida and homeless in Chicago. Homeless in Florida, they ask you for money. You say, sorry, I don't have any, and they walk away. There's this new trend with the homeless in Chicago where they keep asking, and then more people kind of approach you, and you're almost being ganged up upon, and you kind of have to keep walking. It's a little frightening.
It's just, I used to love just walking down the streets there, going to all the wonderful places. Well, look, you would understand. Now, were you a Cubs fan or a White Sox fan?
I'm a Cubs fan, but ever since 2016, I really haven't watched, because that was all I needed.
And I understand that, but I think you might like this story. My very, very first game I ever went to see at Wrigley Field, so this would have been 1977 probably. Dave Kingman was in town. At the time, I think he was with the Mets, if I remember correctly. But that would have been like the late 70s, early 80s, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I think around then. Was this when they like had those chokes in the playoffs where they were like almost close to winning?
Maybe.
Yeah, around that sad era.
But I will tell you why I, to this day, adore Wrigley Field. So I get a great seat. I'm sitting right down in the front row behind the plate. And Dave Kingman comes up to the plate and hits a home run that hit the building across Waveland Avenue.
Yeah.
I will never forget that as long as I live. I was like, man, that guy just hit a ball that hit a building that's about a city block away. Like, man. I love Wrigley. I just absolutely loved Wrigley Field. There's so many things about Chicago I love. It was a great inspiration for me. And I do think part of what I learned about radio was from all the great radio people in the city of Chicago. They were wonderful.
Yeah, it really is crazy, because you got a few shows left. Like, my friend Fred, who's on Kiss FM, has been doing it since 2010 there. But it's really sad. There's really not that many options left. Like, besides him, and there's like sports radio, it's hard to explain. Like, I was talking to my cousin who is 17, and he's like, oh, you're doing so well in life or whatever. And I just told him that I kept working hard or whatever. And I explained to him, I was like, man, before you were born, like, Chicago radio was it. And I feel bad for my cousin that he didn't. I sort of got to experience the twilight of Chicago radio through 2014 when I moved. Because I go back there now, and it's just a jukebox. It's just the same songs, right. And there's really no more shows left.
Well, unfortunately, radio is on its way out. The ratings across America for radio are not very good. Podcasting is the future of the business, but you want to talk about a business that's incredibly competitive. Podcasting is very competitive.
What's been the biggest difference? Because you did podcast your show, and then you did the podcast of your other show besides the KQRS show. So this isn't your first time doing a podcast. But what's been the biggest transition for you going from doing the morning show to just podcasting?
The biggest difference, basically. Well, first of all, I said whatever I wanted to, including, you know, swearing and all the rest of it. But that lasted about 2 weeks. Like, there's no thrill in this. Nobody wants to hear this.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Just because I can do it, I don't want to do it. And the other thing is that, 13 years ago, I launched a podcast with my wife, our son, and our daughter. So basically all I did was fooling them into spending an hour a day with me, which was great.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed that. But yeah, it's a whole different world now. People who want to get into the business, it's not easy to break through in podcasting like it was in radio. There were no local stations or any of that kind of deal. I suppose if you're going to make it in podcasting, you're going to make it on your own. Once you blow up bigger, then you'll get some help. But to get from point A to, say, let's say if you go from 0 to 55% by yourself, then if you succeeded, you'll get some help. But that first 50 to 55%, you're going to have to do it all on your own. You can do it, but it's going to be all done on your own. I guarantee it.
Now, I'm not the biggest fan of Joe Rogan, but I respect Joe Rogan, and he said it best. He says the key to doing a podcast is you have to be famous first, and that's sort of the truth.
I agree. Yep. I will tell you, so it's funny you bring that up, because I've known Joe Rogan for a while and hung out with a few. He is not a nice person.
Why?
I will tell you
what
that.
What does he do?
Oh, he's very judgmental. He is the most important thing in the world, and you really don't matter. And I will say it again. He's a little fella, and he acts just like a little fella. You know, he's not very big. You know that, right?
Yeah, and my thing that drives me nuts about Rogan, if I'm being honest, is I'm a huge Opie and Anthony fan. Like, I'm sad that they're not around anymore. I hate that they hate each other. It's like watching parents that got divorced. Like, they're one of my, they're like my favorite show. Like, I adore Opie and Anthony. But the thing was, Rogan went on their show when he was doing Fear Factor and that, and he has said that Opie and Anthony is the reason that he's doing that show. And I do like that he lets the guests talk, but there's this radio geek jealousy in me where I wish that the popularity of Rogan was Opie and Anthony, because it's the exact same show. It drives me nuts.
No, you are right about that. That is 100% correct. That was an era in New York radio when those guys, Opie and Anthony, competed against Howard Stern. It made them both a lot better.
It did. And have you watched the documentary, The Dark Side of the 2000s?
Oh, yes, I have.
You watched the radio one?
Oh, yes.
I did not know. Like, I knew about, because I'll admit, I grew up listening to Man Cow because he was on in Chicago, and I have a love hate with him because he drives me nuts, and I've met him before, but I am a fan. But I knew about him and Howard's argument and the whole dead daddy thing and whatever, but I didn't know about Howard having John DeBella's wife on, or ex-wife, and then she killed herself a week later. I didn't know about that, because there's a reason Howard didn't talk about that documentary. That made him look awful. The Man Cow thing is kind of morbidly funny, like, oh, your dead dad or whatever, in a dark way. But man, having John's ex-wife on like that, man, that shows how bad of a person he is.
No, I agree with you. There is no reason and no excuse for that kind of thing. I mean, there's a human part. We're talking right now, a couple of podcasters we've never met in person to talk to you through, sending texts back and forth and all the rest of it. But already, just the fact that I've spent, about a half hour with you so far or whatever, I am not that kind of guy. I don't need to bring somebody's wife who's divorced somebody else onto my show. I mean, you have so little faith in your own talent that you have to shock people into listening to you.
I had that. Now, I don't like talking about it because then it gives light to it. But I was in a very public relationship because I worked for Mike Calta, who used to go by the name Cowhead, who was like a sidekick of Bubba the Love Sponge, and then he did his own side show. Sure. So he's a big deal here in Tampa, and I worked for him for 7 years. And I talked about this with Drew Lane from Drew and Mike, and it blew up online because he asked why I left the bone. And Calta lied to me and said all these things, and then he said if I had to leave the job to go somewhere else to make more money, that he would have my back. So I left the job after 7 years, and he hates me for it and whatever. But the point is, I met my ex-girlfriend through his show, and then I made this post about I did an Ask Me Anything where people were like, oh, yeah, what's going on with this? And I would post it on Instagram. And then the funny part was somebody said, what happened to your girlfriend? And I said, we broke up 6 months ago, but I wish her nothing but the best. And then somebody sent it to her, and then she wrote this whole essay and exposed everything from our breakup, and most of it was not true. And then Calta put it on his social media and talked about it on air. And I was mad at him, but it made me more famous in Tampa. And then there was the video that came out in August of him shoving Bubba the Love Sponge's girlfriend to the ground. And it was like, it was this whole thing here in Tampa, and all the charges got dropped because he was famous. And I watched and then I was trying to figure out, I was super mad at him, but I was like, that's what I get for dating somebody who was with me for attention. But what I'm getting at, Tom, is as I watched the John DeBella documentary, and I went, that was just Calta copying Howard because he has nothing to talk about because he has a lot of demons in his personal life. And I go, that's what happens when you have nothing genuine to talk about, is you have to – I just noticed this trend with guys like Bubba and Calta and Rover and Cleveland, is when they talk about other people's dating lives, that's because their personal life is so scandalous that they have to keep it private.
I think that's probably true. I mean, that's a huge part of my show, is that my wife and I have been together for 44 years. We'll be married 40 years. On July 7th, we have 2 children. I adore my wife. She doesn't always adore me. But I just say I never had to go. But I made a decision. I didn't get married till I'm speaking to her. She's coming through the door. She just went to the gym and knows.
What's up, Catherine?
Oh, you want to say hello? Hey, Kathy, come here for a second. Say hello to Ryan.
What's up, Catherine? How's it going?
Hello, Ryan.
I have been a big fan of your show, you guys, for 13 years. This is crazy that I'm talking to Tom.
No, this is so great. She just handed me the phone back. She goes, I know he can't see me, but I'm standing here in my workout outfit, so I don't. I said, he can't see you, honey. Don't worry about it.
That wouldn't be a bad. Yeah. What'd you say?
I said she's far too good for me. That's all I have to say.
No, you. And that's the thing is, there's a. And I'm kissing your ass again, but there's a lot of radio guys that claim to be family men, but then they like cheat on their wives and they like exploit their kids. But what I've always respected about you is you're literally the definition of a family man.
Oh God, I love my family. I absolutely love my family. No question about it. It's nice of you to say that. Thank you.
Well, it's something I've noticed working in the business. And the thing that makes me laugh, and I've already kind of said names so people can maybe figure it out. But what I've noticed, what I love about when guys cheat is they'll fall in love with their side chick, and then maybe they move in with their side chick and they go through the divorce, and then their side chick cheats on them because the relationship began with infidelity, and then they're mad and they're heartbroken, and it goes, but that's the karma of you ruining your family for a woman that didn't care about you. It's, and I've seen it in radio, and it's always funny because then they're left even more burned, and it's like, well, that's what you get for doing that.
What, but all they have to do is do the math. If I'm married, this woman knows I'm married, and she's cheating with me on my wife, why wouldn't she cheat on me with the next guy?
Now, were there boundaries that were set? Because you're pretty public about your family and your kids, but were there like boundaries that were set in the house where it was like, Dad, don't talk about this, or Dad, let's keep this private, or hey, Tom, you keep this private?
As a matter of fact, my daughter has a 7-year-old and a 5-year-old, and she will not let me take a picture of them for public media. She said, I don't want anyone knowing what my children look like.
Good.
Because there are some psychopaths out there, and she's 100% correct about that. It's just, you know, she absolutely will not let me use a picture of her children, which I certainly understand, no doubt about it.
What are some of the best parts about being a grandpa?
To be told you're loved every day, there's no question about. Although I will tell you this, Fawny, who is 7 years old, she's a sweetheart. She's into dance. She's a bit. Oh, now she's starting to get a little bit of an edge though, because she's got buddies at school. You know, there is that deal. But you know, they tell me they love me every time I see him. I tell them the same. Her younger brother is 5 years old. Sage is 5 years old, and he calls me. And the only reason he calls me is so on his phone and my phone, he can turn me into a pirate or a strawberry or a he just loves doing that. And then Andy, my son, who, by the way, supports me from engineering and backup and all, he's terrific. But he has a 2-year-old son. And every time I see him, they call me Bop Bop. That came from Fawn. I don't know where she got Bop Bop, but that's my name for the rest of the time. So every time that I see Ethan now, he goes, Bop Bop, Tumbleleaf. There's a show on, I think it's Amazon. It's a cartoon. And he wants to sit there on the couch.
Yeah.
He wants me to put my left arm around him, and he leans against me, and we watch Tumbleleaf together. Now, that to me, Ryan, is heaven. I love that.
Do you ever get sick of, like, does he watch the same episodes? Because for me, growing up in the 90s, I just had VHSs, so it was the same cartoons over and over, and then I would play Super Mario over and over, and my mom has told me later on in life that it drove her nuts hearing the same music.
Yeah, it's basically Tumbleleaf, and then the other thing he likes is Bluey.
Bluey's super popular, I know that.
But isn't it great that guys, you know, I'm a hell of a lot older than you, but guys our age even know what Bluey is? But that's a good sign that we actually care. You know,
what are some lessons that you tell your grandkids?
Unfortunately, they're not old enough for the big news that I want to tell them. It's like, watch your back, because unfortunately, I have learned in life that about 70% of people are not trustworthy.
Oh, they're for sure.
There's money involved, boy. And it might be a higher number than that, you think?
I think it's gotten worse over time. I think things got worse after COVID. People are out for just themselves, and that's it.
Yep. I think that's 100% true. But yeah, I mean, I just the love of those children, and to play games with them and watch TV with them, or, you know, there's an Italian restaurant here in West Palm Beach. It's called Stressa. I've been going to it. Kath and I have been coming down here for 27 years, spending some time in the winter, and now we live here 8 months of the year. But we took Ethan, who's 2 years old, to Stressa, and I introduced him to Claudio, the owner of the place, and they're going to put his reaction to the food on America's Funniest Home Videos because at the end of the day, he picks up his empty plate and starts licking the plate. And then he puts the plate down, sticks his hand up in the air. Luckily, somebody was taking a video of it. I don't know who it was, but he loved the food so much they were taking a video of it. And he puts his plate down, he sticks his hand straight up in the air and goes, "Yummy!"
Yeah.
That's hilarious. So, I mean, a two-year-old doing that is that is what life to me is all about, is that right there.
Now, how did it feel when you made it into the Radio Hall of Fame? Because I'll ask people that have made it or people that are like on like the list, and some people go, "Oh, that was the best feeling ever." And then there's some people that go, "I don't care." But for you, Tom, what did it feel like to make the Radio Hall of Fame?
Yeah, that was a Chicago deal too. I mean, I've always loved Chicago. I just it's sad for me to realize walking up and down the avenues, all those magnificent department stores and clothing stores and this and that. I loved going down there, doing voiceover, and then go shopping. I just loved Michigan Avenue. Loved it. There's no question about it. So I actually forgot the question you asked me because I got so involved.
It was about the Radio Hall of Fame.
So the Radio Hall of Fame, well, Mike Lindell's name comes up again because he goes, "Tom, I want to fly you down there on my private jet." And I said, "Well, you don't have to." He goes, no, it's an honor just to be on your show, and we're going to fly." So my family, so at the time, Fonnie was the only one, and she was about 18 months, something like that. And so there are pictures of me carrying her off this big jet at the airport. But we got there, and I couldn't believe it. I would say about 90% of my biggest advertisers were there waiting for me. And I said, "What are you doing?" They said, "You think we'd miss this? There's no way we'd miss something like this." Apparently, I did not know this, but there have only been three people in the Hall of Fame from Minnesota. One was Garrison Keillor,
who's
a friend of mine. And Garrison's a great guy. He's a very nice man. Stanley Hubbard Sr., but I didn't know this, but they told me at the time that I am the only commercial radio guy that's ever made it in the Hall of Fame from Minnesota. I did not know that because, you know, Garrison was on public radio and Stanley owned radio stations, but he was never on them. And that was quite a shock, to tell you. He was like, "Why? After all these years, I'm the only one that..." It's like, what? Well, I mean, in your own head, you kind of go, "How the hell did this ever happen?"
Yeah, just looking back on it, was it kind of like a crazy feeling to just think about everything you accomplished and then you're up there just speaking to this like room?
Yeah, it was really pretty amazing. There's no question about that. I got in with some really pretty decent... Well, actually... A couple of the guys were TV guys, so they didn't even bother to show. It was I can never remember that guy's name. He's on Fox TV at 8 o'clock at night. What the hell is his name again? I can see his face, but I can't remember his name. I don't really care for him. I don't dislike him on the air, but I don't really care for him either. He's a little too over the top for me. Jesus. The guy's been on internet he's syndicated everywhere on radio in America. He's got his own. He's on Fox TV. Sean Hannity. That's exactly who it is. Sean's got a little bit of an edge to him too. I will tell you that.
Yeah, he does.
And then the guy that owned Odyssey, Mr. Field, he was there. He was very, his son's a raging prick, but he's a nice guy.
Have you ever met who?
David Field, he owns Odyssey, or he used to own Odyssey, I guess. George Soros owns it now.
Man, I heard a rumor from somebody that it's going to be a bloodbath of them just getting rid of a ton of morning shows.
Oh, God, yes. I would tell you, morning radio shows, which is where all the money comes in, but that's also where all the money is spent, they're in big, big trouble because these hedge fund people are just wiping radio off the face of the map. I mean, WCCO was the biggest radio station in the Midwest for years, and now it barely exists. I mean, it's just radio's in major, major trouble.
Yeah, and it's crazy because I don't know what to believe, because if you read publications that are radio publications, they'll show like a graph where it's like people still listen to the radio or it has the most reach. But then I'll talk to people and they're like, no, I listen to Spotify or I listen to Apple Music, or it's, a lot of people will say SiriusXM. So it's like, I don't know what to believe. It's weird.
Well, I will tell you, somebody sent me the you know, because I got fired at KQRS. Everybody thinks I retired, but I did not. I got fired because the general manager hated my guts because, you know, when she got there, I had a 35 share in the morning.
Man.
35, the highest rated show in America.
Crazy.
She got there and began to just destroy the place. And I kept going and go, would you get the hell away from me and get away from my show? You're destroying my show. So after about 4 or 5 years, we just, she just said, you got to go. I can't work with this guy. And blah, blah. I said, fine. I was there for 37 goddamn years. And then, you know, you want this to happen. Well, good for you. And I left and all the rest of it. But their morning show now is in 13th place. You went from a 35 share, the highest rated show in America, to 13th place. And I believe they have like a 1.2 share in the morning now. I think the rest of the day they got like a 4. And then, but in the morning show, they have like a 1.2.
I've tried to listen and it's okay radio, but you were the captain. That was your show.
Well, so the show's not, I've never heard the show. It's not very good.
It's okay, but it's very safe. You know what I'm saying? It's very,
oh yeah.
Don't really ruffle any feathers. Talk. I've listened to like 5 minutes of it, but it's very safe.
Is it funny at all?
I didn't even really know what I was listening to. Not in a good or bad way. I just didn't. I was listening to the KQRS morning show for Tom Bernard. It seems okay, but it's just for me, I was listening because I could relate to your Midwest outspokenness.
Well, the amazing thing about that is, and it just popped into my head, that the number one rated morning show in that town now is KFAN. And I have three friends, you know, Mark Rosen works there. Meat Sauce, I've known him since he was 16 years old. He's a very nice guy. The number one rated morning show, other than KTIS, which is a religious station, that's actually the number one morning show now. But the number one commercial morning show is KFAN's morning show, and they have a 7.5 share.
Yeah.
I mean, that's... I mean, it's one fifth of what it used to be, basically.
It's crazy. Before I let you go, because I cannot believe we've been talking for 56 minutes and 40 seconds.
Oh, yeah. We have already.
It's crazy. This has been a blast, Tom. This is crazy.
Oh, I love talking to radio people. I really do. I love it.
Yeah, you guys definitely had that really good panel of you guys and Steve Dahl, and that was a fun panel. You guys put it to Morning Show Boot Camp. What do you think of the Morning Show Boot Camp?
Oh, I had a ball. I think who the hell was there? Paul Castronovo, I think.
Yeah,
was there.
Paul's
from
awesome. I love Paul.
Oh, Paul's a great guy. Paul's a really actually everybody up on that stage was really, really nice. That was a wonderful boot camp, as a matter of fact. And they're still doing them, correct? Yeah.
I might be going this year. I got to figure out, because it's in San Diego, I got to figure out like the money factor and getting there. But I'm putting it out there that I'm going. I really want to go.
No, I had I learned a lot that and going to those boot camps, to tell you the truth, back then, because the people, you know, and like you said, I saw the picture of that. I don't look very good in that picture. Thank you very much for sending that to me. I really appreciate it.
I think you look fine in that picture.
Okay, good. Well, I'm glad to hear that. But, you know, I tell you, ballpark, how old are you, Ryan?
30.
30. I mean, you do not act like a 30. I have the hardest time working with people 35 years old. I don't know what the hell it is, but they never finish their work. They show no interest in what you're doing at all, and they want to get through it as fast as they can and move on. What was it about people 5 years older than you that all of a sudden decided that I should just get everything and give no effort to get it?
I don't know where it came from, because I've always kind of noticed that, and I've always fought to show the older generations that I'm not like that. I think it's because of social media. Like, I made a post last week about McDonald's being overpriced, and I just made this little small post, and it got 9,000 likes, 10,000 comments, and then 1,000 shares, and it blew up, and I had 2 million visits to my profile. It was insane that the big moment is about McDonald's. But what I'm saying is it's this instant gratification where I feel like people, like my generation, because I'm a millennial. I'm not Gen Z. I was born in 93, but I'm a millennial. But I think there's people are impatient. Like I had this female co-host on my show, and I was really, even though she's not black, I was trying to get her to be like the Robin Quivers to Howard thing. And it was going well. Yeah. It was growing, but the numbers weren't insane. And it was kind of the same. And it was like she kind of gave up on it. And now she'll talk to me here and there and say she's proud of me. But she's like 34, 35, and she wanted overnight success. And I was like, you got to give it time.
Yep. And that's exactly what I'm talking about. They act like they deserve success, whether they really deserve it or not.
Now, where can people find your show?
All I have to do is go, you know, it's on the Hubbard Network. It's just the TomBernardShow.com.
Tom, this has been an absolute blast, man. I can't explain to you that I just always appreciated that you never sold out, because I mean, even with Anthony Cumia, all he talks about is like race now, and it's uncomfortable, and then Opie's grumpy, and then Stern is just weird now. But I've always appreciated that you, even as you've gotten older, you've always been the same Tom Bernard, and it's always been relatable.
Well, thank you, but I will tell you something. But don't pass this along to him, okay?
Who?
Mike McVay is one of my favorite people in the world.
Mike McVay is one of my closest friends. Mike McVay has done so much for me. I have endless respect for Mike McVay. Mike McVay is one of my closest friends. I love Mike.
No, when he left Cumulus, it was over for me. As soon as he left, I went, I don't like any of these people anymore.
Yeah, Mike's a loyal dog, man. And Mike's... he grows talent. There's a lot of consultants that go, oh, I grow talent, but people hate them. But I've never heard anybody, I've never heard anybody say a bad thing about Mike McVay. Mike McVay is a saint. No. Love Mike.
Yeah, he is a one. Matter of fact, I got to give him a call. He's always been a really, really great guy to me and just had a lot of faith in me. And he was long. As soon as he left Cumulus, I went, this is not going to last much longer, because without McVay, I don't think I'm going to be able to make it.
I thought the same thing about the company, because Mike was the face of the corporate side of it.
Yes, he absolutely was. But, well, maybe one of these days you and McVay and I can have dinner. There's got to be some place right between Tampa and Palm Beach that
I can drive. I don't mind going, because I also want to see Brother Weez, because he lives in West Palm, I believe.
Oh, I didn't know that. Brother Weez lives here?
Yeah, he's in Fort Lauderdale. But, yeah, he's on. He doesn't live in Rochester anymore.
God, he and his wife, and well, as a matter of fact, Paul Castronovo and his wife, Brother Weez and his wife, and then somebody, I can't remember. No, I think maybe it was just six of us. We had such a great time. It was unbelievable.
Yeah, you guys, that's another dude that just, it's always the hometown guys that, especially like a hometown baby boomer radio host, like there's something very charming about it, because Brother Weez was from Rochester and he wasn't supposed to be in radio. And that's what I think makes him so charming, is that he's beyond unconventional. He's not your typical host.
No, you're absolutely right about that. He's a great guy. I've got very lucky. I met very few people in radio that were assholes. There were some, don't get me wrong, but not that many.
Well, Tom, we'll definitely have to meet up, because I can drive to West Palm because I have a car and I live about 4 hours away. So we should definitely hook something up.
Oh, you know what? Actually, the 1st of April, I'm going to be up in Disney World, so I'll only be about an hour away from you.
Oh, for sure. Let's definitely meet up for lunch.
Yeah, we'll be up there from April 1st until April 5th, I think it is.
Yeah, and that's about 80 minutes from me, so I can make a day trip to Orlando for sure.
Oh, let's get that done. But you got the phone number, and now April 1st is the date. So I would love to sit down and have a little lunch or dinner with you, introduce you to Catherine. That'd be great.
It would be an honor, Tom. Thank you so much for everything.
Well, speaking of honors, to be invited on your show is an honor, and thank you so much for that.
Thank you, sir. Keep up the good work.
All right, thanks.
All right, bye. And that was Tom Bernard as he called into Happy Hour. Now, If you have never heard my show, I do two versions of it. I do a podcast side where I interview radio hosts and comedians, and then I have kind of a morning zoo side where I have my co-hosts David Pezza and Joshua, and we're like a millennial version of Stern or Tom Bernard or Opie and Anthony. So if you're listening now, subscribe and go to every single major platform that has a podcast and search up Hoppy Radio, H-O-P-P-E Radio, and go to RyanHoppyRadio.com. And I'm on all social media at Ryan Hoppy Radio. And follow me, because I know I got a ton of follows by tagging Tom Bernard in that post. So spread the word. This has been Hoppy Hour. I am your host, Ryan Hoppy, signing off. Goodbye.
Hoppy Hour. Hoppy Hour.